Welcome to episode one of Damage Control, where we're going to take your favourite worst movies and try and fix them. It's as easy as that, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we thought there was no better place to start than fucking Brett Ratner.
Fuck Brett Ratner.
Because he's a piece of shit.
Molesting wanker.
So what we're going to do is we are going to fix The Last Stand. And do you know how we're going to fix it originally, Eamon? We're going to sack Brett Ratner because he's a son of a bitch.
Motherfucker.
He can fucking get in the sea.
Get in the sea next to the Golden Gate Bridge. yeah, that's right. We're taking on X-Men The Last Stand. It is the franchise that reinvigorated the superhero genre for the 21st century. I think that's fair to say.
But it is such a massive disappointment.
It was a
because
huge disappointment.
Of how good X1 and X2 were.
Exactly. I mean, I remember seeing X2 at the cinema
let's
and it blowing my mind.
Let's just give like a little bit. Like, so what the X1 and X2 did was take the characters that we loved in the 90s series, grounded them, made them more realistic, made them in a real kind of real world setting, and to a certain degree, gave us characters. Now, a lot of people complained at the time that they were so grounded and they were, you know.
Yeah, we didn't have the yellow and blue costumes, but I think because of it's the 21st century. Yeah,
and they dumbed down a lot of the powers as well But what it essentially was trying to do is go, superheroes can be cool. And at this point in time, no one knew that.
Look, let's face it. We all wanted a fucking X-Men leather jacket. Let's not even lie about it. We all wanted one.
Wanted one? I may have had one. But then we get to X3, The Last Stand. And who the fuck knows what happened? There's rumors of studio meddling. Mm. There's scripts being changed hours before shooting.
Matt Vaughn originally was...
Well, Bryan Singer was originally on this for the last one. Then he went over to do Superman Returns and Matt Vaughn.
I actually really like, by the way.
Oh, God. Trust me, we're Damage Control in that.
Oh, it's got its problems. But yeah, I would have been really interested to see Matt Vaughn's take on this.
I would have too, but do you know what? By him going away...
Yeah,
we got some amazing material from him in a different form.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
As an X-Men fan, you know that the biggest cosmotic storyline that we could ever touch on is the Dark Phoenix saga.
It's arguably the most famous X-Men.
I won't lie. I think it's heralded as one of the best comic book stories of all time, and that's cross publishing houses.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely up there, top 10.
But it also, it's not content with trying to do a cosmic, sci-fi, horror thriller in a grounded X-Men universe which hadn't even gone outside of the atmosphere. It then tried to include Joss Whedon's run on Astonishing X-Men, Gifted, where it introduces the idea of a mutant cure. Now, this is problematic for three reasons, Eamon. Number one, focus on one fucking storyline. Don't try and put two massive storylines in one movie.
Number two, trying to erase a minority that kind of associated themselves with it quite heavily.
Yeah, the first two X-Men movies really set about this political parallel between mutants and minority groups. And that's we're not talking about just race here. We're talking... the segregation of people in society and how you can rise up and be yourself and it doesn't fucking matter. Be proud of who you are. That's what the first two X-Men movies taught us. Then X3 says, you're a disease. Like, that's essentially what it's saying. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
You looked into my eyes as you said that. And I feel
you're
like
a disease.
You said that because I'm ginger. Are you trying to cure me of my gingerness?
Mate, if I could give you the cure, I would.
I hate you.
No, for sunburn's sake, no other reason.
Fair.
Number three, the reason why this was never going to work is because when you have a direction like The Cure or you have a direction like Dark Phoenix, the problem is that you need to focus on one of them to the point where you can get... You know, really, they're hard concepts to take on
board.
And
let's face it, done properly, The Cure could actually be quite good.
Yeah.
If it was done with a little bit of delicacy, the underlying message of, people do want to cure you, and that's their opinion, they are wrong, fair, that didn't come across in The Last Stand whatsoever.
No, absolutely. And you know what? This is where we're going to start to fix it, because the rules of damage control, let us just go through with you. You're not allowed to change like the majority of this. So you can't just go, I would delete this movie. It wouldn't have existed.
We can't say that The Cure, the overarching plot of the film, is cut out.
Yeah. So we have to go along to a certain degree with what's in it. And we're fixing. We're not rewriting here.
No.
What my proposal is to the group, to the board, to the comic book board, is that we keep the Dark Phoenix as an underlying storyline in this movie. That we're teasing it. She's losing control here and there, but we're not really going too far into it, yeah? But what we do in this movie is we really make it a political, almost courtroom-style drama about different groups of people reacting to political change and movements in different ways. So you would have the mutants who feel like this is a weapon that's going to be used against them. You would have the people who think finally we can be cured of these superhuman people. Then we have the mutants who want to be cured because they don't want their mutant abilities. And then you would have those who really object to being called a disease, called being something that there needs to be a cure from, rather than just being accepted as a human race. I'd also remove all undertones in this of the Brotherhood of Mutants using the words Homo sapien like it is actually a an insult, because it was very untactfully done, and it basically, you're still human, you're just a different strain of human.
You're an evolution.
Yeah, of course.
Now, I'm gonna touch on the Dark Phoenix stuff first, because it's the first point that you mentioned. Now, as we say, keeping in the confines of damage control, at the end of X2, Jean Grey is under Lake Alkali.
Yeah.
And we see a brief image of the Phoenix underneath the water.
Which was a great tease.
Exactly. And I feel like X3 needed to continue those teases rather than paying it off instantly. Because you have just killed off Jean Grey, and that is a monumental thing to do. And I get it's at the end of a movie. You're teasing the audience for the next one. I get it. However, I think they should have prolonged the teases towards the end of the film.
Yeah.
So I quite liked the brief flashes that Cyclops was getting and that Professor X was getting. That was good. I enjoyed that, but that should have been spread out across everybody. Not just the heroes, but the villains as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like somebody like Magneto would be well aware of this.
Yeah. Particularly if we're meant to believe that this is the rise of the number one universe most powerful mutant, like the universe destroying entity,
because
of the Phoenix Force.
The Last Stand did not detail what the Phoenix Force was. It was just Jean Grey's alter ego,
which you can't blame it. It had a lot of ground to cover, but that's what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Here,
like. And for those that don't understand the Phoenix Force fully, it is the essence of everything living in the entire universe. This is how powerful it is. It
Not
is
even
sentient
Thanos
as well.
Can wield it.
Not even Thanos can wield it. Now that says a
and
lot.
And that basically, to give you some backstory, he cannot wield the Phoenix Force.
Yeah.
Like.
So that didn't come through for me enough, and I feel that needed a lot more explanation. Even if that's through exposition at, like, say, NASA, or even the board of government officials that we see hunting down the mutants when they're trying to cure them all.
Which is
just
why,
like,
I think,
oh, there's some sort of cosmic interference coming along here. We're not quite sure what that is. It would have just been a nice little tease.
Yeah, I think that would be the best way, because you've got to remember, we live in a world where Guardians of the Galaxy exists.
Exactly.
And people were not ready for a space opera in the mutant world.
No, because it was very real world.
Yeah,
based.
It's super. So I think, as you said, that's such a good point, Eamon. Like, teasing, like, you know, if they were using radar or cameras and then crackling out like solar flares.
Yeah,
exactly. If you were basing it on like solar, you could even
tie into the Fantastic Four.
Well, yeah, but you could tie it into like the sun. Like you could say that it was solar. You could explain away. You could kind of layman-splain.
Yeah.
Like what Phoenix Force is, the power of a star.
Because it could still be a dulled-down version, but still be cosmic.
Yeah.
And I think that would have worked so much better than, it's just an alter ego, it's fine.
Yeah. It doesn't work.
So I would have spread those teases out a lot longer, and just skipping ahead to the end of the film, instead of the post-credits scene that we did get, I would have had Jean Grey coming back to life.
Explain what the post-credit scene is for those who can't be asked.
To be fair, this is the one film a few years ago that I discovered actually had a post-credit scene. So earlier on, it's shit. I was very disappointed. Earlier on in the film, we are given some very exposition-led moments where there is a coma patient, and the idea is put forward that you could put somebody else's consciousness into it. And at the very end of the film, this person wakes up. And it's Professor X, and supposedly it's his twin brother.
Yeah.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
I would have had this moment, even if you'd gone with the coma patient and had it be Jean Grey and, you know, go into the whole clone thing of Jean Grey, because that is another big moment in the X-Men comics. I would have done that. I would have had Jean Grey come back to life in the post-credits, and then, obviously, we did not get a fourth proper X-Men film at the time.
You see, I wouldn't have done that.
No,
I like that idea. Yeah, but
I like it, but it's shit.
I like it, but I'm gonna do it, and then it'll be better.
No, fuck you. He fucked up. If it wasn't for vehicle, anyway, wrong franchise. Right. Getting off topic.
So I would have actually had, and this is controversial. Yeah, and this is why I need you to let me get on with it. Yeah,
I'm not gonna say anything.
I would have had everyone cured. Like, I would have had the end of the movie in the same way at a war, but it's all been building up to this war where people are, like, all the X-Men are being hunted down, they're neutralized, they've all got this thing, yeah? I would use an idea that they kind of put about in the end of this movie with Magneto, but I would use that as a much bigger thing where this cure was only temporary. And in the post-credit scenes, I would show maybe one or two of the characters, wait a second, my powers are coming back. Like, that would have meant that we could, and the reason why I would want that is because having this huge Civil War-esque arc in X3 would have meant that, in hindsight, the stuff that we did with Days of Future Past would have been so much more fun. Because it would have been, it would have tied into the timeline. It would have still meant that we had to retroactively stop this war from happening. And it would give you real gravitas for why we had to do it. The other thing I would change in this movie as well is, if we weren't doing Dark Phoenix, we'd never have to see the pointless scene of Professor X and Magneto going to visit young Jean Grey, which would have meant that it wouldn't have ruined the continuity set about in First Class, which came up later, where they said they parted ways and never really worked together from there. It would make so much sense to have a movie that really felt like there was, you know, like what we said with Infinity War, like, shit, wait a second, like, that's real world. But because back then we couldn't have done it in that way, I do think that having Rogue, for example, she would have been the perfect one, because the other thing that we must discuss in a minute is the love triangle, but we can come back to that.
God.
Yeah. I would have had Rogue seek out the cure, and I would have had her cured, like, with a boyfriend or something like that, and then all of a sudden he starts to drain and she doesn't understand because it was temporary. That would have been poignant. You would have set up the next movie.
So you'd make the cure more heavily as a suppressor rather than an actual...
So they thought it was a cure.
Yeah.
They thought it does instantly neutralize their powers, but then you're like, wait a second, because then that's a technique you can use with Trask and the Sentinels later on, where basically they do have... this kind of drug which can temporarily for months suppress powers. I think that would have been such a cool...
That would have been interesting to see. I would have quite liked to see Sentinels shooting darts. I know that sounds really weird to say,
yeah, but that would have been sick.
Seeing, you know, three or four Sentinels all stood there just...
But imagine if a large part of this scene... Imagine if you got... This sounds really weird, but you had a courtroom scene with the Beast, yeah? Who is obviously one of the most physically altered mutants, yeah? Having a scene that was almost runs parallel to something like Philadelphia, in which he's saying, like, you cannot judge me and you cannot treat me based on what's inside of me. You can only treat me based on who I am. And that would have... Mate, that would have hit home. That would have been a home run for a superhero movie at this time to do something like that and go, this is real world.
Now, if we're talking about real world and a superhero movie having gravitas, I think it is very important to play into the real story of Bobby Drake.
Yeah.
Now, we get this love triangle between him, Kitty Pryde, and Rogue.
Which... disservices Rogue something shocking.
I think it disservices all of them, quite frankly.
Up until like the end of X2, she like her relationship with Logan had led her to believe that she was her own person, and do you know what? She's gonna be Rogue. She's gonna be who she is. And then to get jealous and want a cure based on that,
based on a boy,
yeah,
not based on her own experiences, not based on worrying about her own safety. It was based on not being able to have a relationship with a bloke.
And imagine if you could have had like constant nice looking propaganda thrown at Rogue, like, are you fed up with always being sidelined? Are you fed up of always being prejudiced against?
Yeah.
Are your powers dangerous? Like, if they would have been throwing those...
doing it properly.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if they'd been throwing out those sorts of adverts.
Because you could have had, like, look at the statistics of mutant deaths, for example. Because then she'd have been like, well, you know, am I going to die? I'm involved with the X-Men. I'm involved in, you know, the conflict against the Brotherhood of Mutants. You know, am like I going to die?
You know, like in Blade Runner, where they're like, replicants get like, that sort of thing. Imagine if she was being bombarded with propaganda, like on the internet, on TV, where it's basically going, we're here to help you. We're going to help you get the cure. We want you to live a longer...
Well, funnily enough, I'm going to come back to that in a minute because I do think there is an element of that earlier.
Continue with Bobby Drake.
In the comics, I don't know if you're aware that Bobby Drake is gay. He has this story of coming out, and it's always been there. Obviously, he's had relationships with women in the past.
And he's one of the original X-Men, which is why it's so poignant.
It's so monumental as well. And because the X-Men series, for the past 50 decades... 50 decades? 5 decades,
50
even.
Decades.
50 decades. That's how long the X-Men is. The past 5 decades.
For the past 500 years.
The X-Men have been very much idolized by, as you said, minorities. One of those of which is the gay community. Because it's powerful minorities on a platform. And I think that introducing Bobby Drake as a gay character coming out over a period of, you know, 3 movies... would be a really good way of character development. And again, it throws away the shitty love triangle we did get. Yeah. And you don't have to throw a boyfriend in there. You just have to be like, okay, this is me, this is who I am.
You could have an establishing thing with him having feelings for Rogue, but really knowing deep down inside that's not who he is. Like, and so when they're talking, you could even have really nice moments where they're talking about loving yourself as a mutant and being proud of who you are and not being afraid to stand up.
Because it goes hand in hand with the cure and why you shouldn't take the cure.
Exactly. And having Bobby as a proud gay man in X3 and people going... this is a cure, then the parallels between the fact that, you know, in those deep South communities and highly Catholic communities that they feel like there is a gay cure, that would have been so nice to see Bobby struggling with it, not just on a mutant level, but also on a personal level as well. Yeah. That is a drama that... you'd want to see. That's something that you could really get your teeth in. Mate, we're talking now, like, if you gave a producer that idea in this day and age, that's the sort of thing that could be the next Logan, the next tear jerker, you know, Oscar bait right there. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
But this movie could have been that.
But It was not.
It was not.
Now, I'm going to get back to what we said earlier about the whole, oh, we're here to help you. And this brings me to Angel.
Okay.
So at the very beginning of the film, we see a young Angel in the bathroom. And it is actually quite a heartbreaking moment.
He's dark as well.
Yeah. So he's just started growing wings. And obviously, it is a bit of a metaphor for puberty. And he's cutting away at the stumps of his wings. And it's a bit like... it puts me on the edge.
But that's the whole thing with all of it.
Did you not think it was very, like, The Fly as well?
Yeah.
Like, cutting away.
Very body horror.
Yeah. Like, and but say it's a little kid doing it as well.
That's the thing with all of X-Men. The reason why X-Men has worked for so many years in comic book form is because it's telling stories that people would not read a comic about puberty.
Yeah,
you wouldn't like back in the day, in the 60s, 70s, you would not have read a comic about the struggles of a teenage boy and a teenage girl growing up. But guess what? If you make puberty and your emerging mutant powers a parallel, then all of a sudden you can tell that story and you can tell the struggles of it.
So let's pin this down then.
Okay.
So
We're gonna go with the gifted storyline
We're gonna draw out Dark Phoenix as teases scattered across.
Little Easter eggs. If we've learned anything from the MCU, drop Easter eggs all over the place. So people are like, wait, what was that?
Was that? Like, what?
You know.
And then the post-credit scene would be the resurrection of Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'll let you have the resurrection of
Jean
Grey.
I'm not saying it's a great move, but I think, you know, if they were looking
if you're going to do it in the kind of like early 2000s way, the way that you do it is you have it with Logan and you have it, you know, one of those soft focus silhouetted, you know, the exact scene I'm talking about. Yeah. But that's how you do it. And then you could have it in the movie where he's having those moments and every time he reaches out, he wakes up.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the post-credit scene, he has the same sort of thing and he reaches out and it's her.
Yeah.
And then that would be really cool. Because you would be like, wait a second, you're not saying she's the Dark Phoenix. What you're saying is, wait, is she actually back? And then you could have that moment of, imagine if Logan was the only one left at Xavier's school that still had powers, yeah? Because all of us are being cured, yeah?
Ooh,
so he is literally dealing with one of their powers coming back. So he's like, oh my god, what's happening? So one of their powers is coming back and he's like, what does this mean? He goes back to his room. He has the same vision as we've given him earlier in the movie, but this time she's there. And it's almost like we could even get really cosmic and say that the solar-esque flares from the Dark Phoenix merging with Jean Grey is what's giving them their powers back, because it's affecting all DNA.
Ooh.
And all, you know, it's affecting them on a cellular level, which is almost like fighting that cure, like an antibody, like a mutant antibody against that cure. The radiation in the atmosphere is bringing it back.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
That would be great.
That'd be fucking awesome. I think we're both in agreement that we're not going to kill off Professor X.
No, that is never happening.
No.
Please
do not kill off Patrick Stewart.
We can kill Cyclops, though. I like that.
I like that. And not because I didn't like James Marsden as Cyclops.
No, I actually really liked him as, which is why it works.
Yeah, exactly. It is actually quite not a tender moment, but it punches the audience a bit. Although I was disappointed we didn't see the exact moment he died properly. Do you know what I mean?
I think it time and place.
Time and place, yeah.
But there we go. That was X-Men, The Last Stand.
Yeah.
And I think we've pretty much damage-controlled it. What do you think? Do you think that we've hit the nail on the head there? Do you like where we've gone? Do you have a different opinion of where we should take it? Tweet us.
Tweet us at Heroes Direct.
Or tweet me at SwearboxDJ.
You can tweet me at Eamon Jacobs. You can drop us a handy email at writers@heroes.direct. If you want to have your own opinions voiced on the show, download the Anchor app. It's free, I promise. And you can record a clip, send it to us. We'll include it in the show. It's Hunky Dory. I can't believe I just ended a show with Hunky Dory.
I loved it.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.